quick announcement for two of Greendale's finest. Payday is postponed until next week, so this is my freestyle rap apology.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Well, I'm a peanut bar, and I'm here to say your checks will arrive on another day. Another day, another dime, another rhyme, another dollar. Another stuffed shirt with another white collar. Criminals, Wall Street, taking the pie, and all the black man gets is a plate of white lies. Prisons recruiting them, police be shooting them. Rap artists looting them, labels all diluting them. Barack Obama is scared of me, because I don't swallow knowledge, and I spit it for free. Let me clear my throat. Ha, ha, ha. I don't know what that was. I don't know what that was.
So do you not, like, believe, I guess you could say, in sort of, like, the idea that there's fallen angels and demons and things of that nature, like, playing a hand in this world of ours? Or do you think that it's sort of just something that is a superstition almost?
Okay, so I'm never going to say that I don't believe in anything, because who knows?
Yeah, that's when you get attacked by a demon, yeah.
Right, yeah. Everybody warned me that I was going to be attacked writing the book. Nothing happened. My computer broke a few times, but it does that whenever I write. Like during Mind Wars, oh my God, the writing of that book, that was worse. I had to cover up my web camera and,
Jesus.
You know, that was bad. But I was really kind of scared, even though, I mean, I grew up Roman Catholic, so I knew about those concepts and those beliefs. And as a atheist / agnostic, the waverer, and someone who goes back and looks at how things originate, I realized I was afraid of somebody else's idea of what those things are. And so nothing happened, nothing bothered me. Is it the power of belief making all those things manifest for other people? That very well could be. I've written a lot about that. But if you go back and you look at where fallen angels originated, where that whole idea started, it's not what people think. And then you see the progression of how these things got really out of hand. I mean, there are still people that think that, you know, that Satan, Lucifer, and the devil, that they are, that entity is interchanged a lot, but they all have different origin points. And
yeah.
Lucifer, who everyone thinks is evil, was, according to myth, a beloved light. Really, a lot of people think it was a representation of Eden, the morning star.
Yeah.
And so there's all that stuff where after you see that, after I researched it and I see it, it's like I have no fear. I don't believe demons are running around, but at the same time, there's a little teeny tiny percentage of me that leaves it open.
right.
Because in a parallel universe, you know, in the multiverse somewhere out there, there could be a million demons, you know. I'm the daughter of a scientist, and I'm always going to lean on the side of common sense, you know, wanting to know how things began, because that's so telling. And
yeah.
Sometimes it totally negates your belief in something.
Yeah, well, it colors your whole outlook on life. When I was younger, I read the Bible from cover to cover. I'm still proud of it. So it's like, not for any real religious reason, just kind of for that, what you're talking about.
Yeah, curiosity.
About
me
yeah.
too. I did the same thing, and I've read it a million times. And it's like, oh, my God, these people needed editors really badly because of the inconsistencies and the, you know, but it is like a beautiful book of mythology and old-time urban legends even, where there is truth buried within fiction.
Yeah.
There's just like myths, just like Roman and Greek and Nordic myths, there's truth buried in those stories. Those were the stories that those people told of their life experiences and of what was going on around them, because they didn't have the scientific vocabulary and knowledge that we have today.
Right.
So a volcano, holy crap, was a demon, a monster, a beast, a god who was pissed off and angry. Now we know a volcano is a volcano, and we know how it works.
That's a good segue to the Super Volcano book. Did you do that on purpose?
I did. I'm so clever. Well, so we're all going to die. No, I'm just kidding.
So you do have the Super Volcano book is coming back out.
Well, it is. It's out. It's. I actually had from my original publisher after my dad died because I wanted to update it.
Mm-hmm.
And I updated it a little over a year ago. I probably should do it again.
What do you think of that Italian, the stories about the Italian Super Volcano?
Oh, you know, there could be one that goes in our lifetime, or they could act up for decades and never quite blow. And the problem with super volcanoes is we don't know. The last one was 28,000 years ago in New Zealand. Okay, we don't know all of the little steps that led up to it. We know some. We can look at the geologic record and we can see, oh, wow, you know, a year before the soil shifted or whatever, and there was more carbon dioxide or this or that. There's microquake swarms and bigger quakes. We know some of the things, but we have not been, there's been no written record for us to say, here's the 10 things that happened before a supervolcano erupts. Let's check them off now. We don't even know that about Yellowstone.
Right.
So we're kind of going on just half the information that we have. But none of them seem to be ready to go. And they can tell by the amount of magma that is building up in the calderas below, which you can, you know, they can see.
Yeah.
And even with Yellowstone, there's a lot of activity. There always has been. There's earthquake swarms. Sometimes they have fives and sixes. But there's no reason to believe that within our lifetime that it's going to get to that sort of boiling point. But again, there, you know, for my dad, like when we were writing the book, he was saying there's probably super volcanoes in the deepest parts of the ocean that haven't even been mapped yet. They could be ready to go next week.
What would happen if a super volcano underwater blew up?
That would be really messed up because not only would you deal with all of the debris, but you're dealing with the water displacement.
Would it shoot? Would the blast like shoot out of the water? You think, or would it be would it be muted by the water?
Well, some of it would be muted, but that water's got to go somewhere.
Right.
So the water would become displaced and part of the debris, and the problem with that would be your coastal communities.
Like a monster tsunami, a super
monster
tsunami.
Monster tsunamis, yeah.
That's a movie right there. A super volcano goes off underwater.
God, Sci-Fi Channel, yeah.
That's a huge one, yeah.
But it's just like they keep telling us here in Southern California, you know, be ready for the San Andreas. Be ready for it to go. It could go next week. It could go in 30 years. Okay, thank you.
It's like aliens landing. These things.
I know. Just live your friggin' life. My God. but actually, the super volcano that was more to Central California, just by the fact that it's closer to a lot of urban areas, and it's possibly tectonically linked to the San Andreas. So if we have our big earthquake here, if we have an 8, it could trigger the Long Valley eruption.
Yeah.
And that you know, my dad and some of his colleagues felt like that was the real threat. Yellowstone secondary. Yellowstone is located in a very rural area. Yes, there'd be millions of deaths, maybe not millions.
No, not millions.
There would be a lot. But because, like, the 500-mile radius of where most of the deaths would occur, that's going to be much worse here in Southern California, Central California.
Oh, for sure.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I wish my dad had lived long enough because we were going to do another book. And
what were you going
to
do?
So much information. He wanted
another super. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, no, he wanted to write a book. My dad died of ALS.
Oh, I'm sorry.
4 years ago. Yeah, and let me tell you something. Nobody in my family ever had any such thing. I remember a time when maybe one in every gazillion person got ALS, and now it's like rampant. That's a whole other discussion. What the hell? So anyway, but he had it. My dad was working on a microquake theory that had to do with, you know, leading up to massive megaquakes. and he never had the chance. He wanted to get it into a mainstream book so that the public could understand what the fairy was.
Yeah.
And he never had a chance. Now, it's possible, and I don't have any of my dad's things, and still, after all these years, his wife has boxes of his books and research. There could be stuff in there when she gets it to me that I might be able to do something with.
Yeah.
But he had a theory that he was working on. Also, my dad worked for about 15 years with on climate science, climate change, and he worked for DARPA for a while. Ooh.
Exciting.
The bad guys.
Well,
but he told me what it was. When he was dying, he had confessed everything. And I mean, it was, I don't think he was lying, but it was really more about trying to change and alter weather patterns than these weird conspiracies that, you know, they're trying to poison us or whatever.
Alter weather patterns how?
With geoengineering. Now, according to my dad, geoengineering was going on since the 1970s, and it was meant to help offset pollution.
Is this chemtrails?
Chemtrails to a degree, yeah. And I wanted to write about chemtrails many years ago, and nobody would touch the proposal that I put together.
Yeah.
So now you have a lot of people. When my son was a baby, we actually were outside. I was on the phone with someone, and some planes were going over, and we had a white powder that dropped on us.
Jesus.
Yeah, weird. And within the next 3 days, my son and I were very sick, and so were all of our neighbors. Now, were they dropping pesticides because we lived in an agricultural belt? Were they overflying?
Yeah.
Were they seeding the clouds? Because apparently they seed them with all kinds of stuff, including aluminum and these different chemicals. And it just, again, they overshot a residential area, whatever. But that was, and my son is now 16, so he was a baby. So that was like, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, that was like 2002 or something.
In that. Yeah, because I had him in my arms and I was on the phone. So he had to have been very little.
So your dad said that he knew about this, he was involved in the project or whatever?
For the last 15 years of his life, he was semi-retired. He was working as a consultant. He was the geophysical consultant on the Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Project.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my father was one of the key people who said, do not bury the nuclear waste under Yucca Mountain, because of the closeness, proximity to groundwater.
Yeah.
Could have killed an awful lot of people had there been a major earthquake or what have you. He was working on climate science and trying to offset some of the damage of
global warming.
And wow. He made me, before he died, he made me take courses through like Columbia University and all kinds of online universities in climate science so that I could talk to people intelligently about it. So I did that for several years. And
crazy.
Then I just was like, and I really wanted to write about that stuff. But, you know, it really pisses me off because I don't have a PhD. I'm a college dropout. But I am one hell of a researcher. And yet there's such a stigma of, you know, allowing someone like me to write a book.
That's
without
ridiculous.
A PhD after my name.
Well, you should write one about the just sort of geoengineering. I mean, that would be a good book.
I wanted to, and a few years ago I thought about it, and then there's been quite a few that have come out, that have, a couple of them are excellent. And that's, you know, I mean, there are people out there, whether it's in ufology or the paranormal, that are doing such great research that for me to write about UFOs, why? There's guys, and, you know, men and women out there doing a great job. For me to write about interdimensional entities, how could I possibly do any better than David Weatherly? My God, you know.
Right, right.
There are people out there, and it was the same thing. I looked at some of the chemtrail books. There's one Ilana Freeland wrote that was so well researched. It didn't have a super mainstream bent to it. but she was a well-known journalist and still is. And it's a great book. So I thought, you know what? I wanted to write a book called Toxic Shock about all the poisoning in our water, air, and food and what have you.
Yeah.
And nobody would look at me, even though I had written Supervolcano and, you know, written science about quantum physics.
Maybe the idea is like people don't they're afraid people don't want to read a book that's going to scare the shit out of them. Like, I mean, some people do, but more people don't. Like, they don't want to read something that they should read. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
Lisa and I talked about, she said, you know, these books are, they should be out there and they should be read by everybody. But a lot of publishers don't want, you know, that they're just so negative and frightening. And it's like, even with the demon book, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of scary crap in that, but I think it's fascinating. It's our history. But when you're telling people how they're being poisoned and this and that, Mind Wars, for some reason, took off and is very successful and great reviews, and, you know, people rave about the book, and I think that book is more terrifying than anything.
Well, Mind Wars is great. I can see why they would like it, because it's like, it's empowering in a sense, even though it's scary. It's empowering, where it's like there's more to meet the eye.
You've got to know what's going on, people. But I think when it comes to your food and water and things like that, people just feel like, you know what, this is just too much. I'm not going to change the way I eat.
Right.
And the water I drink, and, you know, I'm not going to change too much of my life. And that's where you get that big wall, that disconnect. So, and also, you know, one of the things about nonfiction that's really tough to deal with is the fact that people just assume they can get all the information they want for free on the internet.
Yeah.
And then they're not going to buy your book. You know, I can get that for free, even though they won't because they're too lazy. There's just that assumption. And I know a lot of my colleagues, you know, we don't sell zillions of books because of that. So.
Yeah. Anyone who thinks you make money on books in this field is like, I mean, you can't.
You got to write a bunch of them. That's
the thing. That's the thing. People like, folks like Marie and Nick Redfern, like people who have this immense talent to produce these books, they can make a run at it. But someone who just, like, bumps out a one-off book is like, you're not.
Can't. You're crazy. I mean, I have 16 now, and I'm out of ideas. I've pitched a million ideas to two of my publishers. And, no, oh, we've already done that. Oh, and it's like, you know what? Forget it.
Now, what are you doing in the entertainment industry now? Because I know you're, like, pretty serious in the entertainment industry. So let's talk about that.
Well, here's the thing. I started out doing that. And a lot of people just assume I've always been writing nonfiction, but I actually started out writing short stories, screenplays in my 20s, novels. And I lived in L.A. and I went and I had producers and I had screenplays optioned, this, that. And then I moved to San Diego at that point. And all of a sudden, I just thought, I'm going to write a nonfiction book. I've never done it. I want to see what it's like. And that was 16 years ago, maybe. Maybe a little sooner.
Yeah.
And then it just took off. And I didn't stop because I kept, you know, it kept working. Except I kept feeling like, I really want to go back to the fiction because it's so freeing. You can really just, you could talk about all the same stuff that you're doing in your nonfiction, but you can do it with freedom.
Right,
and
sometimes
people absorb truth
mm-hmm.
better when it's in the guise of a story.
Absolutely, yeah.
Ducks and figures. So a few years ago, I told my manager, I said, I really want to try to transition. That was 2 years ago. So I started to transition over, and last year really, you know, we worked hard to get me in front of producers, and I optioned a lot of material that I'm now, you know, own. I own the material, so to speak, that I pitch. I now have projects of my own that are being pitched out, and this year, like I said, I'm finishing one more nonfiction book, and that's it.
This is your
And I mean,
this is your proverbial season 10.
Well, if a great idea comes, I mean, I still have to promote the books I've written. They're always going to be there. And if another great idea stumbles across my lap, but honest to God, I've been racking my brain. What the hell am I going to write about that I haven't, or that somebody isn't writing better than me? Because I have so much respect for my colleagues.
Yeah, there are a lot of people writing good shit. It's like, yeah, I agree with you. It's like, it's hard. Yeah. You know, you come up with a good idea, but like before you can even really, you know, you start, you Google it or whatever, and you're like, oh, shit, there's already a guy who's doing it. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, it's like I remember, you know, I thought, well, I'd love to write about, you know, interdimensional entities. Oh, no, David Weatherly has that, and who else? Oh, gosh. I'm totally blanking on the cryptozoology people that are writing about that and have been. And
well, Nick Redfern was the Men in Black and shit.
I can't do that. And these guys, they've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
What could I possibly offer them to do? And there's writers that'll just do it anyway and rip
them off.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. That's
what I was
going to
say.
I was going to say that to put you over because, yeah, there's a lot of folks who just churn out shit that's like another book on Rendlesham or something. It's like,
yeah,
I'm good, man. Yeah, you know,
the latest Roswell thing.
It's like, no.
I pitched a book about 3 months ago on the Battle of Los Angeles, which I just absolutely find fascinating. And I thought, well, it's not enough to write a whole book, but I'll write a book about the Battle of L.A. and then military encounters with UFOs, and I'll make it really, you know, really entertaining, really fun. And I pitched it to New Page Books, and Michael Pye, who's the director of acquisition, sent me back a catalog copy from their summer books with one that's coming out. Same exact thing. I thought, God dang it. So it's just so hard. There's nothing involving ghosts that I have not already dug into. Nothing. So I'm just stuck at this point. So I might as well go do something
else. So what can you tell us about some of these projects that people might – it's all very – I don't know what these stories are. Can you tell us anything about these?
You mean the film type of
stuff? Yeah. What kind of fictional stuff are you working on, if you can tell us? I don't know how it works.
So I
have ideas, but I don't tell people them.
I know you do. Yeah, you're supposed to tell me when we're.
I've
written about.
Yeah.
We have to do that. Yeah, I'd written about 8 screenplays in the past, and so some of them I take out and I updated them, and I have an agent. I have 2 agents that I actually work with, and they're being pitched. One of them, which is called Project Aurora, that I wrote with Bruce Lucas, one of my writing partners, is supposed to go into pre-production in September or sometime this fall with Bright Frontier Films. So I'm working with on a million projects. I have a project with them called Disclosure, believe it or not.
Are these paranormal-y films?
A lot of them are. I did a sitcom called Retrograde that has sort of a metaphysical comedy bent. I have a horror. I just finished a television pilot script for a horror story that's sort of like a Lord of the Rings meets Hellraiser, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
I teased
you online. Did you ever get in touch with Kendall Carver from the International Cruise Victims? You were the one, I think, who was. I feel bad. I was being a turd online, so I was like,
the cruise,
Google him.
You know what?
But you let me know if you need info on that, because I do.
I got totally sidetracked. And I had people giving me information, and it's just somewhere. So, yeah, I do, because I do want to talk to a couple of people. But one of my biggest projects, which is at Sony, and they're actually interviewing showrunners, is the history of the Maybelline cosmetics.
What? And that's awesome.
It is.
I could see that totally going to TV. I could see that on ABC, next season or some shit, easily.
There's so much to that story of how that, I mean, that's the most successful cosmetic line, started in 1919, and the whole story involves murder, arson, you know, sabotage.
It's like a real-life dynasty. What?
Oh, everything you can imagine.
Wow.
And that was the very first project that my manager gave me, and I optioned the story rights to one of the heirs of the Maybelline fortune, and she is just this wonderful woman named Sherry, and every week, you know, we get like news saying, okay, Sony's, they're doing this, they're doing that. And it's like, all right, then you wait 6 more months. And
yeah.
So we got word right before, well, a few weeks ago, actually, that they were going to be interviewing showrunners. And a showrunner is literally the person who runs the series.
Yeah, okay.
Like
so I was going to ask
Dead.
You, so you're not going to
yeah.
be the showrunner. What would your
oh,
role
God,
be in
no.
this if it goes
to
the series?
Hopefully, get it's very, very rare and very, very hard to get actually to write the show, because then you have to be on staff, and I don't want to move back to LA and have to write the weekly shows. But what I would like to do is be the creative supervisor or an executive producer, where
nice.
I get to oversee it, because I promised Sherry that I would do everything I could to make sure the story got told the right way. And so, and then I would hopefully get to write the pilot, the first episode, maybe a couple more. But I don't want to be tied down to anyone, because I've got her floating around everywhere.
You say that now, but if this thing becomes the next Desperate
Housewives. Oh, then of course, yeah. What do you take me for, Tim?
Yeah, you're going to need an assistant, so keep me in mind.
I am, and yeah, and I'm working with a number of different co-writers on different things. And then this fall into the winter and into next year, I will be making my first independent feature film.
How so? How are you making it? Are you the director, the producer, the
I am
writer?
Going to write and produce. I have a young guy that lives here in San Diego that is a director, cinematographer, an unbelievably brilliant talent. He also is an actor. And we met through my ex-boyfriend, who I'm still really close friends with, and we've been kind of going back and forth about, you know, how can we, maybe we could do something together sometime. And we finally just thought, you know what, he's got a studio, a physical studio, downtown San Diego, camera equipment, crew, everything.
Yeah.
And we said, why don't we make a feature, an independent film? We have our idea. We have our concept. I'm now going to outline, and then I'll go to script, and he and I will start getting together and just blocking out the whole thing. So that's new for me. That's something that I never wanted to do, because I thought it was so incredibly intimidating. And to have somebody who knows what he's doing and who's actually done it,
yeah,
I think it's going to be a really interesting experience. And
nice.
It's a very, you know, very contained, small cast. Most of it's going to take place in just one area, because we have to pay for it.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting.
And what's the name? What's the, I was going to make
it's
a joke. I was going to hold on for the long time listeners. I was going to make a joke about Kramer's ketchup, which is the William Zabel vehicle that he was telling us about a long time ago. So it's not Kramer's
no.
ketchup, I assume. So
no,
what's the
working title of Fallout.
Fallout, nice. And what
Fallout.
Is it about? Let me guess. It's like about after a nuclear disaster.
It's like a
bottle episode, almost, of a TV show. I mean, they're like in a house or something.
It is a very, very, very vaguely a story of people who implode as the world explodes. That's all I'll say.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's like the line on the poster there. I like that.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that. And then what else do I have? Got all kinds of crap. I actually have stuff at Sony that they're looking at as a package deal, and I think that would be so cool if they would give me a package deal where I just come up with ideas for them, and then they take them and they do what they will with them, because I come up with way more ideas than I have time or energy to ever do anything with.
Yeah.
I still have 4 novels that I had promised myself I was going to get. I wanted to self-publish them, and that was like a year ago, and I still haven't even gotten around to that, so we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, well, I'm pulling for you, dude. I think that, like I said, that Maybelline one sounds crazy. So, what's
yeah,
the name of that?
Insane.
Can we look it up?
It's
like, and see.
Well, right now it's at Fade to Black. I think if you go on Fade to Black Films, it's on their website, and they're the ones that have it at Sony for us. They're like the middlemen. It's called, I believe, it's still called Out of the Ashes. The story of the Maybelline family.
All right.
Yeah, but it's just insane. The story is just, and even if you're a guy and you don't wear makeup, just the things, because it really followed the history of this country from the early 1920s, you know, through two world wars and the Vietnam War, and just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
I see it here. Yeah, it's in development, according to IMDb.
And then I'm going to, I guess, apparently I'm joining the Church of Scientology from what they believe.
Yeah, you said that on Facebook. You've been getting some messages from the good church.
Ever since Mindwars came out. And the funny thing is that we didn't really even give the, you know, we've talked about cults in the book. It's about mind control and social engineering and surveillance and all
that. Yeah, I mean, you didn't spend that much time on church.
No, but immediately following, I started getting all kinds of mail and letters saying, you know, that I had shown interest in joining, and they're waiting for me to come up and interview, and just very subtle. Like, I talked to a couple of people that have dealt with them, and they said, well, what they'll do is they don't come after you full bore.
They just annoy you.
They just keep bugging the shit out of you.
Yeah.
And annoying you. And some of the things that I've gotten have been, it's like, really? You know, you're going to go there?
What do you mean? What do you get?
It's like, I got a letter saying, you know, in 1994, you asked for an interview or whatever. And it's like, no, I didn't.
That's weird.
It's total bullshit. You know, and it's very personalized. I think on one of them, they even had my nickname, which I thought was really weird.
Yeah, you said that. Yeah.
When I first started getting them, I was not at a permanent address, so therefore it wasn't with the DMV. There was no record of me being at that location. How they found it, is
right.
Anybody guess?
Do they come from, like, the San Diego chapter?
No, they're all from the L.A. headquarters.
Oh. I wonder what would happen if you, like, stormed in there all angry and were like, take me off your fucking mailing list.
I have been
list.
Told not to do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. What would happen?
Yeah.
They'd probably uh-oh.
Yeah, I have been told just because I thought, all right, well, I'm documenting everything. I post about it on Facebook. I tell people, and I keep the stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not any kind of, like, pervasive threats or anything. It's just this very subtle, and from what I've been told, that's kind of what they like to do.
Oh, that's
even,
so
you know,
lame.
And I actually thought about writing back and saying, I never contacted, you know, that's not true. And somebody said, don't do it because you're opening the door of communication. Don't do it. Just don't respond. Don't call them. Don't email. Don't even mail back the shit they're sending you because you want to keep that, you know, in case anything happens. And I'm not afraid. I mean, again, I didn't say anything that wasn't already out there.
Right.
But apparently they keep watch and keep track of everything that's said and done, and they are very formally, you know, that they, what's the word? They're very concerned with anybody that speaks negatively of them.
Yeah. Well, they seem like, at least on a public relations level, they seem like they're in, like, their death throes. They're kind of...
Yeah, no kidding. Huh?
They're MUFON-esque. They're sort of limping along here in the 21st century, where everyone else is kind of like, what? That's so cute. That's adorable, except for the people who are still in it. But I wonder, they are ruthless. Digger Dog says in the chat they are ruthless. They are ruthless. They're scary. I wonder, you can't do this. You probably shouldn't do this, but you definitely can't do it now because we're talking about it. But it's like, I wonder what would happen if you went there and you were like, thank you for... It's a sign. You reached out to me and then, like, went undercover in Scientology. Like, how come no one's
done
that yet?
Oh, God.
Or do they just
never,
get absorbed into the cult, I wonder?
I would never. You wouldn't see me again. I mean, I don't know if you watch Leah Remini's series, but, oh, my God. So there was a story, I think it was last week, I don't know if you saw it, about how they found the Scientology owned these, like,
cabins,
buildings,
woods, yeah,
all over the with mental patients, or they wouldn't let people leave. They were like mental institutions and stuff. That's the kind of shit they do, you know?
Yeah.
They'll take you away. They've
yeah, that's
buildings.
True. They could just take. Yeah,
yeah,
that's true. They yeah, like they would have heard this interview, and then they'd be like, "Come to our, come to our retreat. You're you
well,
know
exactly
you're up to level two, and then they're like, sit in this cabin for a minute, and the next thing you know, it's like 2023.
Well, it's kind of like from what I've heard, if you go inside the barbed wire fences, you don't. A lot of times you won't come out, and it's not that they're going to kill you, but if you see anything or if you're exposed to anything, they don't want you running out there in the public.
Right.
So it's like the Roach Motel. People go in, they don't always come out.
Exactly.
That's just something I never wanted to mess with. I'm fascinated by cults. I see cult behavior.
Well, I don't want to be cruel because I don't know. I don't think it's a cult per se. But have you been to? We'll shift over to San Diego because I have a lot of observations from my time there. Except for hanging out with you because you didn't have time for
I
me
know.
In Hollywood.
Oh God!
I had to shame
I
you
swear,
once on the show.
You have to, and you're not going to come back for another 10 years. I'm going to have to find a reason to get out there.
No, I really loved it. Actually, I really loved it. I had kind of gotten sick of San Diego. I had been there like 3 years, two or three years in a row, and I was kind of like, eh. But my brother moved to a different part of the city, and the long absence was great because it was like everything was new again. But to start out of what I was got me on that train of thought was, I'm sure you have at some point, but like, have you recently, just for a refresher, gone by the Unarius building?
No, and I saw your pictures.
You should definitely go. It's really a lot of fun, and the lady, she seemed a little standoffish, but she was a nice lady, you know. So for folks who don't know, Unarius is like this. It's not a religion. It's a science, you know. They say they're not a religion, but they're sort of like an old 50s contactee group, essentially.
Contactee. That was the word I was looking for,
yeah.
Exactly.
And when I had the pleasure of going to California about a month ago, and first we went to the Aetherius Society in L.A., which is, like, insane and amazing. And the guy there was, like, this young guy. He was, like, 19. And he came from, like, Florida, and he moved all the way to L.A. to live at the Aetherius compound. I don't know if you've been to that place. Have you been to that
Aetherius?
Place?
Aetherius? No, I don't even know what it is.
It's another contactee group, and it's right in Hollywood. Like,
oh, it
right,
almost sounds like the Unarius, Aetherius, where they all sound the same.
Yeah,
a weird.
So I did, like, a weird UFO contactee tour, sort of, because I went there, and it was really crazy. You can see the pictures on my Facebook. And then I went, when I was down in San Diego, I was like, well, I've got this on the brain, so I got to check out. And I went there 10 years ago, so I'm like, I got to check this out. And, yeah, it's really, it's crazy. But when I went there, they said to the lady, I was like, yeah, I just came from the Aetherius Society up in L.A. I was checking that out. So, it was, you know, you guys are kind of, and, oh, she didn't, you know. It was like, don't compare us to them. It was like, oh,
apples
my
and
God.
Oranges.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They don't like think, you know, you're just a punk that's going to badmouth them, which you probably do.
Yeah. No, they're nice people. It was quite the interesting layout and shit. Have you ever been there?
I think that I went to is it an El Cajon or like
El
Cajon? I think I was there when I first moved to San Diego because I remember the weird rooms and the.
Yeah, you should definitely go back when you have a free day. Bring your son, I bet he'd love it.
Well, it's funny because the things I've heard about them is that they kind of stick to themselves and, you know, that they are not cult-like in that they're recruiting or,
right.
You know, they have all the manipulation tactics. Church of Scientology does.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I had heard that Unarius was really just almost like a spiritual, you know, again,
it
you
is.
Know,
yeah.
like a spiritual system or
yeah.
a metaphysical community or something.
Exactly, yeah. It's
and I just remember, you know, they were always on the news and people kind of, making fun of them, but in a nice way, because they weren't bad people.
No, they're not malevolent at all. They're actually like very, they're very, well, this lady wasn't. The 19-year-old kid and the guy with the Aetherius side, he was very welcoming and sort of like, you know, hello. The woman in San Diego was very nice too, but she seemed kind of guarded, like she probably gets this
more
often.
Is it the same lady that's been there forever?
It wasn't the lady I saw 10 years ago, so I'm not sure.
Okay.
I had to compare the pictures, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure that lady's, because she was older, that she's probably dead. But I don't know. I guess I would just think that they are like, what the hell do you want? Why are you coming here?
You're just coming to gawk at her.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I don't blame them for being a little bit standoffish. But the one in L.A. was very, they have quite the layout, the Aetherius. So.
Now, is that similar? Are they UFO kind of people, or what the heck
is their
thing?
What I could gather about the Aetherius Society is they sort of adhere to sort of a world belief based on sort of, I think, the writings or the teachings or the channelings of a contactee from the 50s or 60s. I should have paid more attention, but it was like a month ago. And they have like a battery that somehow is like inherently important to the system.
Oh, how weird.
Yeah. And they bring the battery out like when they do stuff. And I think like when they do like ceremonies
too?
And whatnot. Yeah. So.
Oh, no, they did a ceremony. You didn't even know it. You were out while they brainwashed you.
They offered to let us come in for a prayer ceremony, but then they had, like, already started, so it was, like, kind of awkward, and we were like, no, because there was, like, 15 of us, so it was like, we'd probably be this, and when it broke up, like, there was four of them, so it was like, okay, we have, like, almost four times as many people as you have in at the prayer meeting, so.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
Yeah.
They must have thought, who the hell are these people? What do they want, this big mob scene?
Yeah. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was interesting.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
Yeah. So I did like San Diego a lot, though. I would definitely.
Well, come back.
I want to come back. How about now, do you ever go to the. See, because it's like, I'm going to sound like a hypocrite because I don't do any of this shit in Boston. But when I was in San Diego, I did all the museums and stuff. They have a lot of nice museums. Do you go?
Oh, I know it. I've been, when Max was little, when my son was little, and not since. It's funny. I mean, I'm literally one street drive down. It takes about 10 minutes, and I'm at the beach. I'm just inland from the beach.
Nice.
And I hardly ever go to the beach because you know it's there. You kind of figure, whatever.
Yeah.
And so we have, we have the museums and we have SeaWorld and we have the zoo. We have up here where I am. I'm in the northern part of the county. We have Legoland, the Wild Animals, Safari Park. There's wineries. There's so much. I love living here. I would never live anywhere else. And I grew up in New York, and I used to think New York was the only place I'd ever live. But there's so much. All those different museums, and then Old Town, and just so much that you just always think, well, I'll make a day or two of it, and you never do.
Yeah, so, no, I'm the same way with Boston. Yeah. So, like I said, I can't. But I recommend if they still have it. They had one on cannibals at the.
They had one when I was there a few years ago. They had one on torture devices.
Yeah. It was cool.
Yeah.
That was the thing I really liked about it because I went to Balboa Park, and I was like, I went to the zoo first. Now, how often do you go to the zoo?
Oh, I haven't been to the zoo since Max was little. We went on a field trip, so I would say probably 8 years, 7 or 8 years.
I'm probably like a total asshole because I don't know if I would really do this, but I think if I lived there, I would go to the zoo like once a year, once or twice a year. It's
so nice.
It's just so nice.
I know it.
Really is cool.
For you just start to take things for granted.
I know. That's life. It's,
I haven't been to a Padre game in forever when the Chargers were here. I never went to a game. I always thought, well, I'll go next year. I'm a big horse racing nut, so I do go to the track.
Really?
A lot.
That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. But, yeah, and the thing is like, who's going to go to the zoo with me? All my friends, they went with me.
This is what I was going to say, though. This is what I was going
to
say.
I need somebody to go with.
You say that, though, but I went alone to the zoo, and it was transcendent.
Yeah, that would be
fun. It really was. And I used that word on purpose. It was that you were completely free to do whatever you want. You don't have to worry about anyone else, like, needing to go to the bathroom.
Yeah,
they're hungry.
True.
They don't want to spend – they've seen enough of the giraffe. It's like you
– Or they don't
want to
see the reptiles. And,
right.
Yeah.
It's like you can hang out at the hippo for a half an hour, and no one is going to You know,
that's
people
true.
Will stream
that's
past
true.
You and no one's going to say a word or anything. That was, you know, to me it was, and I'll say this, folks, for people who, the ultimate sell job on the San Diego Zoo, I was like, they have little, you know, they have food and refreshments like everywhere.
Yeah.
And they serve beer. And I got, by the time I was on like my third beer, I spent like 3 or 4 hours there. It was that long because I just had the whole day. And I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to go to the zoo. So.
It's great. It's a world famous zoo. And then that's where I am.
The world's number one zoo.
We have the Wild Animal Park, which is out in the boonies. And it's, you know, they're all, the animals are all out doing their thing. And you take trams through and. So that's like the other half of the zoo where they're all out in the wild, can't talk. Which is funny though, because all the times that I've ever been to the Wild Animal Park, the animals don't come out till night. So here you are on the tram, and there's where the giraffes usually are. You know, there's where the wolves.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're all asleep.
Well, what I was gonna say is, so they have these refreshments at all the tables and
yeah.
All these things. So by the time I was on my third beer, you know, I just was kind of making conversation. So I'm like, so I just got to hang out, you know, over at these little tables, you know, to finish the beer, right? And they're like, no, you can just go wherever you want with that. And it was is better than a baseball game. Like, this is, you know, you can walk around. People, you know, I must not have either I'm extreme or it didn't dawn on other people because they would look at me and be like, what the fuck?
Well,
the guy's
it's kind of zen. Yeah, it's kind of zen. Well, what's funny is the best hamburger I have ever had was right outside the children's zoo, and I don't know if the stand is still there. Who knows? But at the San Diego Zoo, where the children's zoo is, there was a stand that was like right outside where the children's zoo fence began or whatever.
Yeah.
That had the best, honest to God. Best hamburger
weird.
I have ever had in my life. And whenever I say that, people, oh, please, go to this. No, you don't understand. I love hamburgers. I've eaten a lot of them.
Yeah.
It was insane. And Legoland, my sister-in-law is one of the managers there, so we get to go free all the time.
Oh, nice.
They actually have a stand there, too, that where the hamburgers are outstanding. And they're freshly grilled, and you would not think that of, you know, a place like that. You think they'd have the shittiest food around, but they don't because they want you to come back. And
that's true, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I haven't been to the zoo since my kid was little.
I recommend these places. Check them out.
Yeah.
Unarius, the zoo, and
the museums. They always
the museums,
have stuff going on at the museums.
Well, that was the, because I when I was going to the zoo, I passed the cannibals thing, and I was like, well, that's what I'm doing tomorrow. I was like, this is crazy, you know. And then after I did that the next day, they were so nice. I left the zoo. I probably had too much to drink. I went right to the cannibals, and they were like, we're closing in 10 minutes. I had already bought a ticket. They're like, here, just come back tomorrow. And I'm like,
oh, that's
thank you.
Yeah.
Because I was like,
I saw some of your pictures, and I don't know if that exhibit would have really gone over well with me.
It was interesting.
Oh, my God.
It was very interesting, yeah. It wasn't as gross as I would have thought, in a way. You know?
I think it's just for skin crawling that there is enough cannibal stuff, you know, to make a museum display.
Yeah, well, luckily they didn't, like, get in. They never had anything about, like, crazy serial killers or anything, so that was good.
Yeah.
It was more just, like, historical instances of how it's come up over time. I thought it was really interesting. If I could find a good guest to talk about it, I would really delve into it. But then, after I left there, I was wandering around Balboa Park, and then I passed the Natural History Museum, and there's a giant, like, crazy-looking skull, and it's like, it just says skulls. And I'm just like,
heaven.
Yeah, I just pivoted. Went right in. I'm like, well, I guess I'm doing skulls now. And then I saw all these crazy skulls. It was
cannibals, you were in heaven.
Yeah.
You were in heaven.
It was really cool.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
they've got the aerospace, the space museum, just the automotive museum.
Oh, yeah, tons of museums.
Oh, yeah, I just walked from one to the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get the books coming out, what now, Archetypes in July.
Okay. Our Power of Archetypes is July 21st, I think, around there. Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels is September, and then the Emergency Survival Guide will be sometime early next year.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then by then, a lot of these projects will continue simmering So we'll see.
Yeah, they will. They will. Yeah, it's just really exciting. There's so many different things that are going on. There's different levels of this project is advancing and this one is going there. And, you know, I wake up in the morning, I check my email, and it's like, I'm a workaholic, and I am so driven that I can't sit idle.
Do you work from home?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How do you deal with the constant sort of I work from home. I find it kind of tedious sometimes. Do you have any tips, work from home tips?
No, because I'm really undisciplined. I write, you know, in fits and starts. I have the TV going. I watch movies in between. I play with the dog and the cat and, you know, I hang out with my kid. A lot of people will say if you work from home, close your door, don't let anybody in, put a do not disturb sign and be very disciplined. I'm the exact opposite. I need chaos in order to produce. And I've been like that all my life. I think it's easy to get get on Facebook and spend too much time, but I've managed to somehow stay really productive regardless of that. So probably really, you know, it is cut out the distractions.
Yeah, but it's hard, yeah. Well, the thing is, it's like when you work on a computer, it's like that is the distraction, you know what I mean? It's like you can't help but be distracted.
Oh, yeah, and then you got your cell phone and people are private messaging me with, you know, crazy pictures and things.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, yeah, I have a lot of really strange friends.
Oh, people, yeah, they're trying to they're almost like a comedian in a way. They're trying to you think this crazy picture's good enough to get on your...
Yeah. Really, they do wall. Now. The newest thing is everybody's trying to find me blind dates, and the worse, the better, because I posted a few really crazy pictures of strange guys and said, you know, I'm going on a blind date. See ya. So now I'm getting people messaging me pictures of, you know, guys from the 70s and little skivvy shorts or whatever. Somebody, a guy in prison, and here's your next blind date. It's like, okay, thank you.
Oh, yeah, I've seen your, you post those, yeah.
Yeah, my blind dates. But between that and just people contacting me wanting questions answered or how do you write a book, which is like, you can't, really, you think I'm going to answer that in a two-minute response?
People write to you asking how to write a book, huh? Jesus.
Or can I meet your agent? No, I don't know who you are. You know, you. What am I just going to show you to my agent?
Yeah, that's just odd. Well, I don't know how many friends you have on Facebook, so maybe if people want to be your friend, look her up and see.
I think I have 10 spots left, but I get rid of people often.
I get rid of people all the time.
I do too.
If they say dumb shit, if they say crazy shit or if they just say shit that I don't like, I'm just like, all right, you're out of here. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and they were like, oh, so you unfollowed them. I'm like, no, I just unfriended them. And I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah.
All right, dude,
I'll
take this that seriously.
Like crazy.
Yeah.
Well, for me, the big thing is if you insult me or degrade me on my own page or you pick fights with people that are responding on my page, you're out.
Yeah.
You know, go to hell. I'm not that tolerant of that kind of behavior, especially if I post something that's my opinion and you discount it.
Right.
Really?
Right.
It's just my opinion and you're telling me you're wrong. No. An opinion is an opinion. It's not a right or wrong thing. It is my experience, you know, and you're telling me your experience is right and I'm wrong. It's like, no. Not cool. So I have people get fist fights practically on my pages, and I'm thinking,
Jesus.
I don't go to your page and do that. What the hell?
That's just weird.
There's no etiquette, yeah.
Well, you can't
I think
even...
because I'm female, they think I'm going to let them get away with it, but I don't.
That's right. You little pranksters.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just, I told you, I said at the beginning, it's just that whole Facebook, I mean, I like it. Believe me, don't get me wrong, I like it, but it's like, it's really awful in a lot of ways. It's gotten awful, especially like, it's just too political. It's just too political.
It's getting worse. I think I was talking to a friend the other day about how hostile everyone is. People are on edge. They're too sensitive. They can't take an effing joke. They've lost their sense of humor.
Oh, totally. That's for sure.
It's just Yeah, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah, I mean,
grow a pair. Laugh at life. Yes, I'm still serious about the terrible things in the world, but I can also laugh at life. What's the problem? Jeez.
Right, right. Well, that's why I try to, like, be lighthearted about shit on my page, too, because it's like, sometimes I would have put something and then it would be like, it would just feel you arguing on there about politics. It's like, oh, Jesus, dude, I don't want to deal with this shit, you know.
Nobody ever changes their mind because, you know, somebody told them something that made them go, oh, wow,
Right.
So don't even waste your breath.
Exactly, yeah.
Crazy.
Like, yeah, if you can argue with somebody on there, like, write it out and then just delete it and don't.
Show me facts. I want to see facts. Damn it.
Facts or alternative facts. That's the
alternative facts.
Jeez.
Yes, that's true.
Now, getting too much, I don't want to get into politics at all, but I just want to ask you what you think of just sort of like this world now we live in where everything is a fucking conspiracy. Like, have you noticed this?
I think conspiracies exist by the sheer fact that the word simply means people that conspire to do things that are not done in public. Obviously, we know that that happens, especially in politics and business, you know, where a lot of money and power is involved. But not every school shooting is the Illuminati or, you know, somebody trying to pass a gun control law or this, that, or the other thing, or somebody who's MKUltra. There have been some interesting school shootings and things where that may be the case, but people are just going to the extremes. That goes left, right, and center.
Absolutely.
Because I was a Democrat for decades until fairly recently when I finally saw how corrupt the Democratic Party was.
Right.
They're just as corrupt as their embassy because I lived by that identity politics and I woke up. Somebody pointed out to me, da-da-da-da-da, and I was open-minded enough to look and say, holy shit,
yeah.
I am now an independent. And again, when it comes to religion, I'm agnostic at most, and I'm usually more lean towards atheism. So what I've noticed, though, is when you do step back and detach, and you can start to see how both sides of the extreme are nuts.
Oh, yeah.
They're both
crazy.
Corrupt.
Yeah.
And there are some really good people on both sides that are desperately trying to bring things back to some normalcy and common sense, but they're being drowned out by the lunatics.
Right. Well, we've talked before about, like, and this isn't even, again, this isn't even like politics. It's like just the nature of reality and shit. It just seems like reality
human
is broken.
Behavior. Oh, my God.
Like, reality
human
has
behavior.
Gotten completely fucked up. And
yeah, doesn't it seem that way? I thought maybe it was just me. I thought there seems to be a weird escalation of shitty behavior going on. Like, everybody is just hostile and bitter and angry. And
paranoid and cynical.
Paranoid.
Yeah. It's really, there's a, we need like a summer of love here, man. We need like a transcendent moment.
I think it's going to happen. And we're either going to destroy ourselves or we're going to have to completely rebirth our humanity, one of the two.
Yeah, it feels like these are coming up on a tipping point that could go.
I hope
one
so.
Way or the
I
other.
Hope so. Jeez, enough of this high tension stuff.
Exactly. Now, where can folks find? What's the best place for them to find Marie Jones online?
Oh my gosh. Well, Facebook. I have two websites: MarieDJones.com, and then my production website is Where'sLucyProductions.com. And I'm on Facebook, Marie D. Jones, author. I'm on Twitter, Instagram as Marie D. Jones. So you can pretty much track me anywhere. I think on my website is all the links to, social networking and stuff.
Awesome. So MarieDJones.com.
Yep.
Awesome. We're bringing it in right on the runway. Perfect. Well, thank you so
yep.
much for coming on the show, Marie. All these
thank
years.
Thank you.
As I've said, this is the last of the seasonal format. I'm not sure what I'm going to do exactly after this, so I'm putting a bow on, a decade plus of doing these crazy shows. And as I said, you've been on since year two or season two, so it's been a thrill and a joy to have you all these years on the program.
Well, thank
and it's
you.
Been fascinating and enlightening. And thank you for, bringing all this information and laughs to the audience for over a decade.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Awesome. And we'll talk soon about my ideas off the
other
air.
Stuff. Off the air stuff. Sounds good.
All right. Have a great night.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you to all the guys in the chat room, all the folks in the chat room. They're disappearing now, so I can't see them. Digger Dog, Jim Lydica, Darren, John O. I guess I'll say it. I don't want to say his whole name. I don't know how that kind of thing works. But, yeah. Well, that was it. Thank you so much to Marie Jones. That was awesome. I loved that conversation. I was amazed by the really unexpected avenues we explored there. I was really her Men in Black experience and the whole half hour there talking about the latest in UFO news. I hadn't planned that at all. So, and I always am hesitant to bring up the latest news with guests because it's like I feel like I'm putting them on the spot. You don't know if they're really going to know what you're talking about, and it's like it kind of turns into like train wreck radio where you have to explain a story. But she was chomping at the bit to talk about those stories, so I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it because I sometimes don't offer my opinion, but on those I got to express myself about these various stories. So I hope folks enjoyed that and the whole interview as a whole. And I guess that's it. 5 weeks in a row, the train keeps chugging along. Next week on the program, it's going to be a big one, folks. The legend, the icon, the friend of the program for so many years, the amazing, incomparable Lauren Coleman will return to BOA Audio, the man behind the International Cryptozoology Museum, and as I said, a pure icon of the paranormal and the esoteric. It's going to be a blast. I don't know exactly what time yet, so I got to touch base with Lauren and find out what time we're going to do it. But that'll be next Tuesday, June 6th, 6/6/17, kind of a creepy numerological thing we're trying to do here for the episode, or we plan to do for the episode, because, you know, we're going to try and get into, I know Lauren doesn't like to mix and match, but I'm going to have to force him to do it. You know, the Twilight language stuff, we're definitely going to get into the creepy clowns, and of course we got to get an update on Bigfoot and what's going on in the search for Bigfoot. As I said, Lauren will know more about these reality shows and other Bigfoot shenanigans than I possibly could. So we're going to get into all that. The legend, the icon, Lauren Coleman, next week on BOA Audio. And on that note, we will wrap it up for the evening. Thanks again to everybody who tuned in, and I'll talk to you next week.